Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff?
Morning, Sal. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing today?
Wonderful. Wonderful. Who you got for us?
Well, our old favorite, our standby, our grain expert.
Oh, you said favorite. I went through about four names there in my head. And it's Aaron. It's Aaron. That's, yeah, he is our favorite.
We don't tell anybody else that they're their favorite, Aaron.
No, I bet I'm only the fourth person today out of four that's heard that.
When I pulled up, Aaron sent me a text and said that he had to be mobile today. The last time he texted me was a dead ant, a huge buffalo hanging upside down. And
yeah.
I pulled it up and I was like, whoa, dead animal.
He is our buffalo hunter.
Have you had any of that buffalo yet, Jeff?
No, he has not offered me any of that.
Nothing. I got nothing.
He brings it into the office and actually for lunch. But
I was there one day.
He's not offered anybody, you know, a chance to sample it.
I was like, man, that smells good. Doesn't smell like hamburger helper. It smells like buffalo helper.
I'm just trying to perfect it first before I let anybody have any.
I don't think shot one. I think it's hamburger.
It was a big, that was a funny looking cow. He didn't shoot a buffalo.
You don't know that he shot that one.
Oh,
that could be any buffalo.
It is amazing what you can do with AI now.
Well, Aaron, before we get started, your question of the day is, what is something that you purchased that you're surprised at how much you use it? Or if you can't think of that, what's the most unnecessary thing you've ever purchased?
I hate to say it, but probably the most unnecessary thing that I've purchased was a big sectional for the basement. And it's not that the sectional, like buying a sectional
like a
for
couch?
The basement. Yeah. Like a couch. It's not so much that that's bad. It's, I have this gorgeous, and the salesman even called it this when we walked in. He goes, oh, you want to see the Ron Burgundy couch? And I kid you not, this looks like it came straight out of Anchorman. I mean, it is a brown leather, low back, big sectional. The little pleats in it, so it comes down into little buttons and stuff.
Send a picture. I mean, we got to have a picture of that on the web on the call. Is it called a Ron Burgundy couch?
I don't know if that's the actual name, but that's what I call it. I mean, it looks like you ought to be drinking scotch and smoking a cigar on that, of which I don't smoke or any of that. Like, but it looks like it should be in one of those places, especially with my deer heads in there. I mean, it looks phenomenal. I just don't use it that much.
If you would invite us over, service some buffalo, and let us smoke cigars and drink scotch on your couch, we could be the judge of this ourselves.
Can you imagine we light some cigars up in his basement? Oh, his wife would be.
Leslie would not be impressed.
She would not.
Jeff, what have you bought that you're surprised how much you use it?
You know,
or that you're don't think you use it at all. Unnecessary.
This is one of those, again, I feel like a broken record. You know, I need to read these questions the day before and come up with some good answers. Cause I know I have stuff that, you know, that, and this is going to be this is kind of off the wall, but, we bought a set, we call them bacon tongs or bacon tweezers. And my family's listening to this going, oh yeah, we know what he's talking about, but they're the little kitchen gadget. And, you know, my wife likes to put a lot of bacon on a big cookie sheet. And she's always telling me to turn it. And you get those great big tongs and it's, you know, got two pieces stuck together. They make a little set of, well, I shouldn't say little, they're like 10, 12 inches long. And they're basically just big oversized tweezers for the kitchen. And, we got them and just kind of it was almost like a joke, but then it's like, wow, these things really work. So we actually got all the kids one for Christmas and it's like, everybody likes them. My daughter's mother-in-law tried them, and she's like, I'm getting those for everybody on my side of the family, too. So, you know, there's a thing out there. I don't know if
Bacon tweezers.
Bacon tweezers. They're just big cooking tweezers, but they're great for turning bacon because you can grab one slice at a time. So that's the first thing that popped into my head that because we were joking about it at Christmas time. It's like, this is stupid, but they really do work.
Yeah, that would, because the tongs are always, they're just
too big for a piece of bacon.
But and then you try to use a spatula and it's
yeah, like so I don't know. Go on Amazon or do a search for food tweezers.
All right. Well, I'm in the same boat Jeff's at. I didn't have anything prepared for that, but the most unnecessary thing ever purchased or surprised at how much I use it I would say anything my wife gets on Amazon that hangs on a wall. It was a couple of years ago, we were sitting at the kitchen table, and I hate it whenever she goes, "Well, what do you see this different?" And I'm looking around and I'm like,
loaded question.
I don't know. And I'm like, those vases up on top of the hutch? And she goes, "That was a wedding present from your sister." I'm like, I don't know. I can't play this game. I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of unnecessary things that I've bought that I don't use.
But there's cool gadgets out there that we get and we use. We take them for, we start using them so much you don't think about
them. That's true.
So I didn't have time to study this one.
Yeah. We may have to bring this one back, Aaron. Yeah. Try it again.
Bacon tweezers. You know, if I had some bison bacon, you know, do they make that? We could use, we could test out the tweezers.
Oh God. He's got 600 pounds of bison in his freezer.
You bring some meat. We'll figure out a way to use the tweezers on it. We better get to back to the grain.
Let's talk about grain-fed bison. Aaron, tell us a little bit about the grain markets. What's going on? What's current events?
Yeah, so right now, all eyes are focused on at the end of the month, the quarterly stocks report, the planning intention report. That's where all the eyes are right now. March USDA WASDE report isn't much of a market mover typically, and this one was the same. I mean, they kicked the can down the road again. It was the exact same as the February report. So nothing earth shattering there. I mean, even the trade estimates weren't penciling in much of a deviation from it. So really no big shocker there from it.
What are farmer attitudes as they come in and talk to you? You know, what's their attitude? They lean in towards more corn acres. Can you get a good feel?
It does feel like there's going to be more corn acres. And that's what the trade is estimating. You know, I think back in, February, you've got the Ag Form outlook that comes out. And it was 93 something and 84 roughly on for beans. And that's really where the market's at right now. I mean, there's a little bit more of a variance on the corn. Trade estimates wise for the corn acreage, anywhere between 93 to 95.5 million acres of corn. So that number is going to be a big one to watch. You'll see fireworks if the corn acres come in below that range. I mean, you'll see something wild happen on that one. If you see it come in towards the top end of that, you know, right now, I think if you take out the average estimate, it's probably around that 94 mark. If we do come in at that 95, that would also set off some bad fireworks. We'll see how that plays out. So, but that one, I'm almost a little bit more curious on the quarterly stocks report. You know, I said most of the conversations seem to be more corn heavy for this year versus beans. But the quarterly stocks, I think, is the one that's going to tell us a lot about where we're at currently and what could we look like in the future. Because this time last year on farm, they had 24% more left out on the farm than they did in 23 at that time. That was on farm. The commercials actually had less in their storage facilities than they did the previous year. So this year, I almost think it could be flip-flopped where the commercials have more still in the bins and the farm level got rid of it early this year. You know, last year we kept, usually January is a big month for grain flow. You'll see that in basis charts and futures, and you'll see all that where you see pressure on the market. This year we saw the opposite. You know, basis took some hits, which is typical, but the futures just rallied from January through February. It was a rally market. And that incentivized the farm level letting go of stuff. And I think they did. So that's the number that I'll be watching for.
Very good. I know we kind of see about locally, it just seemed like we had so much snow on the ground that we're not used to, and things never really happened in January. I mean, nothing really moved, but we're such a small part of the, of the Corn Belt. It's just a non-factor. It's not like the whole rest of the Corn Belt was snowed in, and those places that do get snow, it doesn't slow them down. They got the equipment to blow it out of the way and get rid of it.
Yeah, I kind of hope we haven't had enough snow in that upper Midwest that feeds the Mississippi River, so we have plenty of water in it for this summer. So
should be full right now, isn't it?
You know, it's not overly full. That's I know. I'm not saying we should be alarmed about it right now, but there's been some comments made in the industry that we didn't see the snow pack up there like we usually do. So I don't know. It'll something to watch.
Gosh, you forget how far away it feeds the Mississippi.
That's right.
I mean, yeah, it's more than the Ohio.
Yeah, but like I said, when you look at our little pocket of the world, it's like we thought we had plenty of snow for what we normally have. It takes a lot of snow to feed these rivers. Yeah. So.
Aaron, I know the last time we talked, you said that something had to happen, right? To make these markets move and there wasn't anything, in the short term, demand that was looking like it could, but anything recently within the last 100 days of an administration change or anything or insight that you see that gives us reason to think that things are on a positive outlook?
I mean, we can go ahead and say the key word here, tariffs.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
The market's obviously watching that, seeing how that all plays out. We've seen tariff rates go up. But what has, I think the biggest question is now that the tariffs are in place, we saw phenomenal export sales numbers. You know, so we had sales on the books and kept coming in before the new administration took office. And the big question was, and I think still is, do those sales end up being deliveries? And were those sales bought out of fear of the new administration and the fear of tariffs? So were they buying them early and just gobbling up everything that they could before the tariffs went in place? So the good news and why we saw January and February kind of have that momentum that we saw was, and to this day, we're still ahead of the USDA inspections for exports on corn and beans. We're still ahead of pace to meet the USDA goals.
Wow.
Corn, we're definitely ahead of pace. So that has given the corn market some solid ground to stand on. You know, we use the vast majority of corn domestically. So ethanol usage has been good. They continue to use it at a higher pace than what they probably thought they were going to. But the export number, anytime you want to see something kind of out of the ordinary, kind of help push this thing to the next level, it'd be your exports on corn. It doesn't make up the lion's share, but anytime you can add something to that, it helps out a lot. So we saw that. We're still seeing that where the actual export inspections are still holding together, which means we're still truly moving it out. We're not having cancellations on the sales front. So that is really good news. Beans, they're right there slightly above pace, but kind of on pace, which has been good to see too, with South America potentially having a massive bean crop down there. And, you know, we're getting into the point of the year where the next 100 days is going to all be about all weather for the U.S. growing season.
Bringing us back to, you know, kind of the local markets, what do you see this basis doing looking from like April 1st through the end of August? What's your best guess on what we're going to see basis do?
Yeah, so, you know, history typically shows that you'll see an appreciation in basis because at the farm level, you're out in the fields, you know. So when the flow slows down, if the futures don't do the work for it, then basis will step in and do the work, especially at the processors, you know, or if an export terminal was getting low on inventory and they've got some barges or seafaring vessels to fill up, they've got to pick up the pace. So they try to incentivize that. And that's in the form of basis typically. Futures do X amount of work. Anytime the futures does the work, you'll see basis stay ho-hum. But at this point, what we saw at the very tail end of February and at the beginning of March, and we're still kind of seeing a little bit of it now, when you see the funds exit their position, you see these futures start to drop. because they were corn wise, especially, they were holding a lot of long futures, or they're betting on higher prices in corn. Well, they started to make that shift and they've exited that position. They're still long, but they're nowhere near what they were. So when you saw that, you saw the futures come down. Well, when futures comes down and you start to get into this planning window, what typically happens? The farm level doesn't want to move anything. They want to see better prices and they're busy. So now we're starting to see that basis appreciate some. So I, you know, your end users, I could see it start to have a little bit of appreciation. I think right now that the farm level is just tight fisted, but again, it goes back to that quarterly stocks report. Even locally, I don't think there's very many beans left out there. So do you see beans get a push because there's just not much left out there? So it'll be something.
That is, I agree. Yeah. I'm kind of like with Aaron. I don't think there's very many beans left. Doesn't seem like.
You got any beans in your bin, Sal?
No, I think they're empty.
Yeah, mine are too.
Yeah. All right.
So, and it's been.
But I don't think that mine will make a big impact.
Yeah, I don't think mine.
I don't have the great big 60,000 bushel.
It's been something to watch this year. I had a meeting last week with some other merchandisers from kind of spread out across the state of Indiana. I don't think we had anybody from Ohio there. But going from northern Indiana down to us in southwest Indiana, we kind of got a better feel for what everybody feels like is still left out there, how they're sitting, things like that. And the group that was putting the meeting on brought up a good point, and I kind of forgot about it. I always like talking about ending stocks, right? Ending stocks, stocks use rate. Those are where we finish out a year. And that tells me if we have good enough supply, not enough supply. And if it's not a supply issue, is demand going down or demand going up, right? So what I found interesting was back, if I looked, and I just ran these numbers. If you go back to October, stocks to use rate for corn was 13.3%, right? That's a very comfortable level. That's not like historically high volume of corn left over to take into this 25 fall, but that's still a good number. It's comfortable. It doesn't need to pay much. And we saw that, if you look back at October when these futures, they're down in the threes, And so what we're seeing now is between October to the March report, they've dropped 3% off of that stocks to use rate.
October to March.
So now we're down to 10.2% stocks to use rate. And I've said it before, anytime you get below 10, corn feels tight. So we're right there at that level where there's got to be some premium in the market. And I think that's what's holding it up right now is we've got potentially less bushels on the farm because they moved it early. The rally incentivized that. And unfortunately, I think some cash needs are having to be met this year. I've been curious about that. I've probably been about 12 to 18 months ahead of pace on that, of thinking the money would run out on the farm level just because of some of the dynamics going in the marketplace. But I think we're seeing some of that now, unfortunately. And so I think that's something to be mindful of, to your point, Jeff, of what does basis do? I think that's another thing to say, maybe basis improves. I don't know about futures. I can't control that. And basis, that's kind of what the market does. It moves bushels from where they are to where they're not. And if they're not at the end users, then they will push to get what they have to have to in order to feed the hogs, the beef, the chicken or poultry market, whatever it is, they will push to get it if they need it. Now, beans, on the other hand, they've lowered the stocks to use rate from October to November, from October to March. And that's, seeing these stocks to use rate lower isn't anything new. It's just how quick these have moved and how much they've moved on the corn front. Usually it takes a longer period of time to kind of see this play out. But we're seeing it quicker, at a quicker pace on the corn. The beans, we've gone from 12.5 to 8.7. And so we're still very comfortable on beans. There's no big alarm going off for the bean market right now. But that is still something to watch. Anytime beans get, you know, said before 5%, but at the meeting last week, they reminded me, really, once you get under 6, it starts to feel sketchy as where we're sitting. So 5% is a hard number. When you get below that, wild things happen. I mean, that's when you start seeing those $13, $14 beans. But at 6, the market starts to perk its ears up and pay attention to what's going on. So the lower bean acre number may be something that can help the beans get a little bit of a tailwind. Administration news, everybody's watching to see what happens with the, you know, biodiesel and blend rates and all that. And so we'll see. But the good thing is China's still buying beans. They bought a lot going up. We're ahead of pace on beans, but how do we finish the year out? That'll be the big question mark on corn and beans for those tariffs.
Very good. Yep.
That's a lot. All right, Aaron, yeah. Do you have anything else for us?
I'm sure a lot of the farm level has seen this. If they haven't, they need to get a hold of their local, I'm assuming FSA office or anybody that they talk to about government reporting and things like that, because they came out with the direct payment program for the 24 crop. So this stuff that we still have in the bin, those acres planted last year, they came out with a direct payment program. So for corn, these are up to numbers. Okay.
Yeah. Up to.
It's not, you planted a corn acre, you're going to get this. It's up to, there's some stipulations, but it didn't look too terribly complicated, but corn can see up to $42.91 per acre of corn, and beans could be $29.76 per acre. So, and they could start applying for that. I believe that was yesterday that they could start.
From your email. So yeah.
Today's 3/20, March 20th. So by all means, whoever's hearing this, absolutely go out, talk to your local office and get that stuff filed and figured out for you.
That's very good.
Yeah, that's good information.
All right. Well, Aaron, you got a big afternoon, so good luck with your all's appointment.
Yep, thank you.
All right. Well, that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thank you all very much.